now presenting John Gabriel, the undisputed king of stuff.
What is up, podcasts? This is your favorite host, John Gabriel, and your favorite podcast, the king of stuff. Changing things up here. I actually do not have an interview today. I feel like pretty much all of my recent podcasts have had an interview. And a lot of people are like, hey, we just want to hear more about you, John, your thoughts on the issues of the day, because you're the smartest person we know. Okay, all right, I'll give in. And I'll admit, yep, you're right. Once again, listener, you are correct. So I'm just going to do a big wrap-up of the news. One story that is not getting enough attention is Joe Biden. He's nominating someone to run the Labor Department. There's a guy named Marty Walsh, who, from what I can tell, for a liberal, did a decent job. It's the labor secretary. How tough is this thing? But Joe Biden wants Julie Sue. She was in charge of the California economy, and she has been the number two person in the Department of Labor for the past couple of years. Well, he wants her to run the labor secretary department. Now, okay, nobody's heard of Julie Sue. Heck, nobody's heard of Marty Walsh. I bet only 10% of the country knows that there's something called a labor department. But this could be bad. And I wrote an article for the local paper about this. And I think it's a good thing if people in Congress, the Senate, stop this nomination. Of course, senators can make this decision. When she became deputy labor secretary 2 years ago, it was a very close vote, party line, 50 to 47. She passed. I just hope people take a second look, because our economy is very shaky right now. And she is the worst person who could be chosen to do this. So she led the California Labor and Workforce Development Agency, which seems like it would be a good setup to be a good labor secretary. But what happened during her reign of terror, of error, in California? Well, remember when they were sending out a bunch of unemployment benefits to people during COVID? There's a bunch of lockdowns. People got laid off. Other people just couldn't show up to work because all the offices closed. Well, she oversaw more than $11 billion in fraudulent unemployment claims. She finally had to fess up that she had done that. And she admitted, we didn't really have much for security measures. To show you how much money this is, the federal government wasted a ton of money on this. This was like at least a third of the national total of the money waste on these insane programs. So, she isn't good with money, and the Labor Department oversees the federal unemployment program. Well, over the whole COVID-19 era, the Labor Department, the federal Labor Department, spent $888 billion on job relief. An eighth of that money was spent in California. And as we know, $11 billion was misspent, was unaccounted for. So, yeah, she is the wrong person to be overseeing this kind of thing. Secondly, she aggressively supported California's AB 5. This is Assembly Bill 5. You might be familiar with it. Federally, they tried to pass last year the PRO Act, which a big part of it was basically abolishing independent contractors in California. And then when they tried to pass it nationally in the PRO Act, it would go nationwide. Drivers for Uber and Lyft, they would have to unionize. Those companies would have to view those drivers as full-on employees, provide them all sorts of stuff. Essentially, it was a huge thing to categorize and herd people into unions. Everybody needs to be a full-time worker, and then once they're a full-time worker, that's when unions can prey on these people and start fighting for them, quote-unquote, i.e. taking donations from them that are slipped out of their paycheck without their approval or ability to say no thanks. So this has been AB 5 in California has been tied up in courts ever since it was passed. It was a horrible idea. And essentially tech companies, they have lobbyists. So they got a court to overturn the part where tech companies had to abide by it. Freelance journalists, myself included, would also be fired or have to be a full-on employee. Well, they were getting a lot of bad press about this. So the state of California exempted those people. Doctors and lawyers, well, they have a lot of money. They can hire lobbyists. So they were exempted. So it was just this really weird thing where the connected and powerful didn't have to abide by this law. Everybody else did. California's trucking industry has almost been destroyed by this. We already have the supply chain issues we've had for a few years. Well, a lot of those people are independent contractors. They are not employed as full-time employees by some huge conglomerate. Those people are getting hammered. This thing, like I said, it's been tied up in courts. The entire thing might be thrown out. It's been piecemeal taken apart, one court decision at a time. So there's a good chance this will be thrown out in the state. And we're talking about California courts here. These are not rock-rib conservatives. So who knows what the Supreme Court would do if they tried to bring this nationally. Well, the only reason that he would be choosing this person is so she could, administratively speaking, push union policies, push union membership, not really oversee money very well. And since they couldn't get the PRO Act through, maybe behind the scenes as a bureaucrat, she can push these things from behind the scenes. People should vote no. And I kind of directed this. I wrote it for my local paper. So I directed this at our two maverick independents who are always willing to work across the aisle. At least that's what they say in all of their advertisements, Senators Mark Kelly and Kyrsten Sinema. Sinema, of course, is independent now. She still caucuses with the Democrats. Mark Kelly is usually just a party line vote, but it was kind of ridiculous during his most recent campaign where he was up against Blake Masters. All he did is run as a hardcore Republican. That's what, I'm not talking about Blake Masters here, who did that as well. But that's basically what Mark Kelly was doing. I'm a tough guy. I'm ex-military and I'm always voting for Republican stuff. Vote for me. Well, okay, here's your chance to prove it, dude. All you need is one or two Democrats to vote against her or just abstain. Julie Hsu will not be our labor secretary. So it's just a story that it seems like nobody's talking about, and it could be really bad. It's the whole thing with the administrative state where the people making the real decisions aren't electorally accountable. You have Congress passing these omnibus bills where they say such and such shall be done by the Medicaid administrator, by the labor secretary, by the subcommittee to fill in the blank. And that's how Congress says, hey, we didn't make these bad decisions. That agency did. Well, you gave them the power to do that. So anyway, I should probably include a link to that. But there's a lot more important stuff. The big stuff everybody's been yammering about for the past week is Donald Trump is just about to get arrested. He was going to be arrested. I'm recording this on Wednesday. So Trump was supposed to be arrested on Tuesday of this week. He was screaming and yelling on Truth Social. Oh, my gosh, they're going to attack me. They're going to arrest me. Everybody needs to defend me. And you had a couple people defend him, like other Republican people running for office. Vivek Ramaswamy, I believe is his name. I should have looked up the full name and spelling beforehand. He's bashing DeSantis for not supporting Trump, and I support Trump. Dude, you don't have a chance. I know you got to sell books, but you don't have a chance of winning this thing. He's very emotional. He's very reactive. He earlier, a couple weeks back, said we need to send troops and basically invade Mexico due to the cartels. Okay, hold your horses, dude. Read a history book and see how those previous invasions of Mexico went and how we were not exactly greeted as liberators. So anyway, his ideas seem a little bit half-baked. He has some good ones, too. He's very anti-woke, but he's a little too desperate to get into the top tier, which will not happen because nobody knows who he is. But ever since Trump said, now we know falsely, that he was going to be arrested on Tuesday, everybody's been yelling at Ron DeSantis, you need to support Trump. You need to support Trump, especially the hardcore, I would call them the always Trump people. You have the never Trumpers, and then you have the always Trumpers. We will not consider anyone but Donald Trump for president. I think both of those are very bad pathways to go down because that people are very imperfect and they're going to say things you disagree with. And I'm sorry if I'm supporting candidate X and they say something I totally disagree with. I will jump to candidate Y very readily because I am not loyal to politicians. It is politicians' job to be loyal to me. That's just how I've always viewed these things. But DeSantis was under a lot of attacks for not commenting on it. And you have a couple people on Twitter who apparently are paid by Trump. And it's just sad, you know, just trying to bait DeSantis into responding. And DeSantis has just been cool as a cucumber through all this, just as he has for months. He's not officially running for president. He's focused on being governor of a very big, very diverse, very powerful and successful state. He's got a lot on his plate right now. And it seems obvious at this point that he's leaning towards tossing his hat in the ring, but he doesn't need to comment on every bit of drama that comes out of Trump world. He has nothing to do with it. You have a stupid prosecutor in New York City who is trying to take out Donald Trump. It is not someone in Florida. It is not something that Ron DeSantis has anything to do with. You would think that the Trump people would be attacking Alvin Bragg. He's the guy who's actually trying to prosecute Trump on a quote unquote trumped up charge. But here's the play. Donald Trump gets himself into a pickle for whatever reason. And yes, this is a stupid case. It never should be brought. It's against the it's after the statute of limitations. Other people have already passed on it. This guy, Alvin Bragg, has when he was running for election, he promised to indict Trump. So he's just fulfilling a campaign promise. This whole thing will most likely be tossed out of court because it's ludicrous. Even people who are very far left who despise Trump are saying this is stupid. You have people defending Trump like David French and David Frum right now. That's how no case the situation actually is that Alvin Bragg is trying to bring. Well, yeah, Ron DeSantis, he has nothing to do with it. But, oh, you got to make a statement. You got to make a statement. They're attacking him. Okay, look, guys, you have been bashing DeSantis for months now, and now you're screaming and screeching that he needs to protect Trump. He has nothing to do with this case. It's just crazy. Maybe you shouldn't have attacked him nonstop for months and trying to take DeSantis for court, to court, which they've done, saying that he's running a shadow campaign, which is illegal, which is really weird and really stupid. That'll get tossed out too. But you've been bashing this guy nonstop. There's no reason for him to jump in and defend you. And if you're so strong and powerful, why on earth do you need Ron DeSantis to make a statement in favor of you? Well, finally, earlier this week, Ron DeSantis made a statement about it. Here is a clip of that.
I've seen rumors swirl. I have not seen any facts yet, and so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros-funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros-funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society at the expense of the rule of law and public safety. He has downgraded over 50% of the felonies to misdemeanors. He says he doesn't want to even have jail time for the vast, vast majority of crimes. And what we've seen in Manhattan is we've seen the crime rate go up, and we've seen citizens become less safe. And so you're talking about this situation with, and look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to is that if you have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago to try to use something about porn star hush money payments, you know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office. And I think that that's fundamentally wrong. I also think it's important to point out when you're talking about these Soros-funded prosecutors, yes, they may do a high-profile politicized prosecution, and that's bad, but the real victims are ordinary New Yorkers, ordinary Americans in all these different jurisdictions, that they get victimized every day because of the reckless political agenda that these Soros DAs bring to their job. They ignore crime and they empower criminals, and that hurts people, hurts a lot of people every single day. These Soros district attorneys are a menace to society, and I'm just glad that I'm the only governor in the country that's actually removed one from office during my tenure.
And what do you know? As soon as he made a statement, and that's what I was saying over the weekend, actually, if he makes a statement, the always Trump folks will attack him for the statement. And that's exactly what they did. Oh my gosh, he's so terrible. He's so terrible. Guys, you wanted a statement. You finally got a statement. And now the statement's the worst thing you could ever say. Everybody knew this play was coming. And actually, there was another interview with Piers Morgan, which was being teased, where Ron DeSantis talked about the various nicknames that Trump has given him. Let me play that clip as well.
job.
Which is your favorite nickname that Trump's given you so far? Is it Ron de Sanctimonious or Meatball Ron?
Well, I can't.
I think even he went off Meatball Ron.
I don't know how to spell de Sanctimonious. I don't really know what it means, but I kind of like it's long. It's got a lot of vowels. I mean, so we go with that. That's fine. You know, you can call me whatever you want. I mean, just as long as you also call me a winner, because that's what we've been able to do in Florida, is put a lot of points on the board and really take the state to the next level.
Perfect way to handle it. That's how it should be handled. Look, he's busy doing stuff. And I know Trump, I think the thing is, one of my favorite presidents is Calvin Coolidge. And why? Because he had zero drama. Didn't talk a lot. He just did things. He did things behind the scenes. He oversaw the budget. He cut spending. He cut taxes. He got stuff done. He put points on the board instead of talking about putting points on the board. And I think that's the frustration that I have personally with Trump. And I think a lot of people are seeing, even people who voted for him twice, are feeling the same way. It's just all the time, just drama, drama, drama. I'm tired. I don't want to pay this so much attention to politicians. And so many of these dramas are just self-inflicted. He says something stupid about somebody else, and then everybody needs to defend me. Dude, just be quiet for a while, okay? You lost to Joe Biden, of all people. Come on. But it's just this all drama, all the time thing with Trump that is just exhausting. And the last thing that Ron DeSantis should do is jump into the mud pit with him and start wrestling. There's absolutely no reason for him to do that. He's doing well. Will he beat Trump? I don't know. If he beats Trump in the primary, will he beat Biden? I don't know. Because all the Trump people might stay home. They might take their ball and go home. I don't know, but there's no reason at all for him to jump in on this. You don't need to. Good example. When I worked in a newsroom many years ago as a young, up and coming, budding journalist, it was always chaos, especially as you got close to deadline time. Everybody's freaking out about something. Oh my gosh, somebody needs to edit my story. Oh my gosh, somebody needs to lay out this page. Everybody's panicked. Everybody's freaking out. I was managing editor at the time, and we're talking a physical paper, and I had a principle of SEP, somebody else's problem. Now, I actually got this from a great management book called Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. There was a scene in there where, if anybody hasn't read that, please do. It's brilliant. It's very Monty Python-esque, very brisk, very funny read. That's what I spent my time reading books like that in high school instead of studying. But anyway, there was a scene in there where you have a normal Earthling and you have a guy who's pretending to be Earthling, but he's actually an alien. These two guys are buddies. They go to a cricket match. And the alien in disguise dude is freaking out because the world's going to be destroyed and flying saucers are attacking. And the normal Earth guy is just like, what are you talking about? There's nothing going on. So he puts on somebody else's problem glasses that the alien hands to him. And then he can see all the horrible carnage coming out at him. And the principle the alien tried to explain is, there are many things in life that just don't involve you, so your eyes don't pick them up. Well, I'm going to let you see what's behind the veil of everything going to crap around you, even though there's nothing you can actually do about it. So he would place these somebody else's problem glasses on him, so the Earthling, who had nothing to do with this storyline, could see all the horror going around him. Well, that's what I had to tell a lot of people in the newspapers, because when person A is freaking out, they want everybody around them to freak out, even those people who have nothing to do with it. Well, in a very chaotic newsroom, I learned very young to say, that's somebody else's problem. If you're upset that your story isn't edited, why don't you talk to the guy who's supposed to edit it? If you're upset because your story wasn't laid out the correct way on the features page, talk to the layout guy. I have enough to worry about. I do not need all these things that have nothing to do with me, frankly. If they get to my level, I'll handle it. But just talk to the person, and I'm not going to panic to help you feel better about panicking. I have no interest in that, and all it will do is distract me from doing my job and the stuff that is my responsibility to do. So, yeah, I think with Ron DeSantis, this fits into Trump's latest indictment, latest drama. It's somebody else's problem. Trump, you are supposed to be the greatest guy ever. You can handle it. I'm sure you can figure it out. You don't need Ron DeSantis to fix it. You don't need me to say something pleasant about you on Twitter. No, figure it out. Handle your business. And if everybody just handled their own business, it would be a lot better. But I'm not going to get all het up and turn complete drama queen because something is happening to a different person who has nothing to do with me. Just stop. It's just ridiculous. You have these guys on Twitter who are supposed to be defending Trump. All they're doing is pissing everyone off. All they're doing, they're spending all their time just insulting everybody who leans to the right, every Republican, every conservative, just bashing them nonstop until they say something nice about Trump. I'm like, dudes, you can't alienate everybody in the party and then expect to win a primary. Aim your fire at Joe Biden and the Democrats. That's what you should be doing. That's what DeSantis is doing. And instead of people who are in your party and you mostly agree with. It's just crazy. So, it's just not looking good for Team Trump. He's actually up in the polls now. He has risen above DeSantis. There's a couple polls where DeSantis was pulling ahead. Now Trump is ahead. But this is no way to run a campaign. I am not buying into the drama du jour because every other day it's going to be something new with Trump. Now they're saying he's going to be indicted next week. Will he? I don't know. What if Ron DeSantis had jumped on this and made some big, strong statement, and then, as it turns out, Trump wasn't indicted on Tuesday, and then he wasn't indicted on Wednesday, and then, who knows, a week from now, they might decide, you know what, this looks bad, we're not going to prosecute him. Then he would have, you know, Trump would have wasted this couple of weeks on getting everybody upset and panicked. If DeSantis came out and talked about it, then he would have been dragged down in getting off message and not doing things in Florida, but instead going on talk shows to defend Trump and say what a great guy he is. It's just not worth it. There's nothing in it for him. So, obviously this is a stupid prosecution. And if it were to go through, okay, that's when DeSantis should make a statement, because now we're talking about facts. We're not talking about something hyped by Trump, which, as we know, a lot of times just don't happen. They don't come to fruition. I wouldn't get out there on a limb. So I think DeSantis is playing this right. I think I mentioned this last week. To put my cards on the table, I'm definitely leaning towards DeSantis. I'm not anti-Trump. I am not anti-Haley. I'm not anti-anyone. I just want to, usually when I end up trying to, I don't know, figure out which candidate to vote for, usually I look for the candidate who will hurt me the least or who I expect to hurt me the least. And that's how I make the decision. So I don't have these romantic attachments to various candidates because all of them are going to let you down in one way or the other, because politics is a messy business. They have a lot of constituencies to worry about. And I know that if my if I personally ran for office on my platform, I wouldn't get more than 3 votes. And those people would be related to me because I know my views are this kind of weird hybrid of conservative and libertarian. They would never be popular. People love government giving people free stuff, quote unquote, free stuff. So I know that my beliefs aren't terribly popular. So I know that no politician is going to do everything that I want them to do because they never get elected if that's what they committed to. Now let's move on to the perennial punching bag that is San Francisco, the city by the bay, Frisco, as locals hate to hear it called. It was once a very beautiful city. I remember first visiting, actually when I was in the Navy, there was Fleet Week, and our sub pulled into there, and we were the USS San Francisco, so we got the red carpet rolled out for us in particular. Beautiful city. Went there again a few different times. Loved it every time. Until the last time I went. Brought my wife there, actually, just mostly for the day to check out some restaurants. She loves Asian food, and there's all these different fantastic places you can eat there with various cuisines. And basically she was like, can we never come back here again? I enjoyed the food, but this place is crazy. That was probably over 10 years ago now, but just very, very mean and aggressive panhandlers, people trying to take your money. It was going south quick and you could see it way back then. And now it's just a friggin' nightmare. Well, they're focusing on the important things in San Francisco. You might have heard that they are talking about giving a bunch of money in reparations to the black families, black adults who live in that town. So they were, the advisory committee reported to the city council, and they included their plan of giving $5 million to every black adult, a personal debt and tax burden relief, guaranteed annual incomes of $97,000, and they can buy a home in the city for $1. That's just the start. There's changes in school curriculum. There's all these things. And all the supervisors said, this is great. This is amazing. And actually, many of them complained because some of the people criticizing this plan when it was first trial ballooned a month or so ago, these commissioners were astounded that even white liberals in very liberal, progressive San Francisco, white liberals were opposing this. They said it wouldn't work. I can't believe this is happening to our city. It's just absolutely insane that they would be doing this. And this is kind of pathetic, too. Apparently, there's one Republican in San Francisco. He runs the San Francisco Republican Committee. And he says, well, I'm open to this discussion, but we need a more serious proposal. This proposal isn't serious. So, dude, no, it doesn't need to be open for discussion. It makes no sense. San Francisco never had slavery. They weren't part of the Confederacy. You can tell that by looking at a map and seeing where California is and then looking where the CSA, the Confederate States of America, were located. There's a bit of distance there. But yeah, these people still want to do this crazy reparation scheme. Good luck with that. And something that popped into mind, I'm actually guest hosting on Wednesday's Three Martini Lunch. It's the Greg Corumbos, Jim Garrity daily podcast every weekday. And they had me fill in today, and we were talking about this issue. Something that popped into mind, and I checked the stats on this, 5% of San Francisco is black. Very tiny minority of people within San Francisco. They're so progressive and liberal and tolerant. 5% of their residents are black. You know who makes up a huge chunk of people, more than a third of San Francisco's population? Asians. Why aren't they giving reparations to Asians? Because Asians, okay, they were actually discriminated against by official San Francisco policy for many years. There's a derogatory term. It was commonly used back in like the late 1800s when you'd bring over a whole bunch of mostly Chinese laborers to San Francisco, and they called them coolies. These were not technically slaves, but they were. It was basically indentured servitude, and they would pay them pennies. Any white person making money, they might make a buck. Well, these coolies would be paid pennies. They helped develop all the levee systems and water management systems throughout the San Francisco area and surrounding environs. They helped build the Transcontinental Railroad. And at the same time, they weren't allowed to frequent most businesses in San Francisco because there were anti-Chinese discrimination leagues that were officially set up. And the people who endorsed them sometimes were running the government of San Francisco. So instead of virtue signaling and saying we will help out this tiny, tiny, tiny minority in our city, why don't you focus on something you actually are responsible for? How about having the 2/3 of San Francisco that is not Asian pay back all the Asian people? Then I'll think you're serious about this. Oh, but John, that would be too much money. Yeah, well, that's the point, isn't it? You actually, as a collective, as a city collective, you were responsible for treating Asians like crap for many, many years. They probably didn't get full rights, you know, as far as being able to live wherever they wanted and so forth until the past, I don't know, 50 years, let's say. But there's a lot of racism going on. It just wasn't directed at blacks because there weren't many blacks there and there was no slavery there. They did have this crazy indentured servitude model, paying pennies on the dollar to who they derided as coolies. Yeah, why don't you pay them back? Focus on that. Oh, but that isn't just virtue signaling. We can't do that. Well, okay, yeah, you guys aren't interested in that. And if they pushed this reparations plan that they are doing today, yeah, what do you think about all the, you know, the more than third of the people? It's something like 34.5% of San Francisco is made up of Asian Americans. Are those people supposed to be paying reparations when they were discriminated against for many, many years? Their grandparents, maybe even their parents, were discriminated against. So it's San Francisco being as loony as possible. What a bizarre place. And what a shame to see with all the problems caused by the COVID lockdowns, with tech completely fleeing, that they are focusing on this nonsense. Now let's move south of San Francisco down to Los Angeles. Seeing a lot of California plates here in the Valley of the Sun here in the Phoenix area. Yeah, because they're all fleeing California because the state is insane. They're actually shrinking in population while we're increasing quite a bit. But in LA, after the horrible lockdowns, after shutting down schools for at least 2 years, after some of the most draconian rules against, I don't know, you need to wear a mask, you need to be vaxxed, or we're not going to take care of you. Well, LA teachers are on strike again. Are they upset about working long hours, not getting enough pay? No, none of those things. It's because a different union, SEIU, is striking. So in solidarity, the LA Teachers Union, they're also striking. They posted one video talking about liberation. They're at Venice High School. Venice, I don't know if it's, I think it's officially part of LA, but it's right along the beach. It used to be another beautiful little beach town. Now it's just covered by homeless camps and the like. But they post this video, cheering over this video, that teachers, school workers, and community members are united for better schools, and they're all dancing in front of the school. They're not teaching the students. They're just having a big dance-off. Okay, a little humility might be in order. Teachers in LA, after what you did to these poor kids, we saw this around the country, but it was particularly bad in LA. And this is how they react. They dance in front of the schools instead of teaching kids. Oh my gosh, people on the left, you guys are killing the golden goose. California used to be so prosperous, and now they have these huge budget excesses. Now they're in huge budget deficits. It is going down the crapper. I don't know. I know it's a beautiful state. I've said every time I visit, it's a little bit worse and a little bit worse. And yeah, I was there last summer for like 10 days. And boy, if you are in the right neighborhood, I was in Newport Beach, and it's like everything seems to be going well. Man, you go a few miles away, and it is rough. It is getting rough there. Unless you're independently wealthy, I don't know how much longer you can stay there. Yes, it's a beautiful state. It is going to hell in a handbasket, but it's a hell of a handbasket. That's what I'll say about California. But it is going south very quickly, and they're talking about bills in the legislature there to find people who want to leave. So might want to get out while the getting's good, folks. They don't care about your kids. They don't care about your taxes. They don't really care about reparations. It's just a way to punish people that they don't like. Getting pretty rough there, folks. Moving on to the nation at large, the National Science Foundation. Ed Morrissey wrote about this recently, and that's where I'm getting this from. Check his work out. He's awesome. I got to ask him to be a guest on the podcast. I don't think I ever have. I will need to check with him. Anyway, they gave $5.7 million to create a tool which would use machine learning, et cetera, AI, I'm sure as well, to target skepticism of government programs. The main thing that they're focused on is people complaining about electoral integrity or vaccinations, whether they're good or not. That's what they said they want to focus on. But basically, anyone who is skeptical of a benevolent government is going to be targeted by this program so they can, I don't know, attack them, mock them, block them from social media, etc. Yeah, $5.7 million our government is spending on this. Now, the professors who created this grant abstract, here's a quote from them. Quote, "Democracy and public health in the United States relies on trust in institutions. Skepticism regarding the integrity of U.S. elections and hesitancy related to COVID-19 vaccines are two consequences of a decline in confidence in basic political processes and core medical institutions." No, that is not, the skepticism is not because of a lack of trust. You have a lack of trust because you don't do your jobs well. And this is what a lot of people in D.C. don't seem to get. When the media lies all the time, when the politicians lie all the time, when the government lies all the time, when the big corporations join them in their lies, and they're all saying in unison, "Don't believe what you're seeing with your own lying eyes, trust us instead." Then, of course, any kind of criticism is called a conspiracy theory. Then, of course, a few months later, said conspiracy theory is proven to be correct. A lot of times the government admitting it, but never apologizing for giving misinformation to start with. These are why we don't trust you. It's because you're not trustworthy. You don't need to spend $5.7 million creating a program to punish people for being skeptical of government. Especially here in America, we've always been skeptical of government. That's kind of the point. That's kind of why we had the American Revolution, why we have the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. It's because we're always skeptical of government, and you are not going to beat us that out of us using some fancy AI machine learning program. It will not work. But just the fact that they're trying to do this is pretty sickening. Look, we don't trust you. The media lies to us. All of these institutions are doing a very poor job, and they're lying to us constantly about it. So, yeah, I don't think this is going to work. But once again, disgusting that they're even considering this. Speaking of professors wanting grants and releasing white papers and studies about various issues, something that we've mentioned before on here and I've seen repeated really as long as I can remember is when they talk about people's well-being, you know, how are you feeling in general? Are you feeling good, feeling bad? There's always been this 10-point gap of people who I self-identify as liberal versus conservative. There's always conservatives are always have a higher level of well-being than liberals do. And this has been consistent for a long time. Well, there's a guy, Musa Al-Gharbi. He's a sociologist at Columbia University, and he wanted to find out why this is and study it. He did not come out with strict conclusions on this thing. But he did note once again that there's been a consistent 10 percentage point gap between the share of conservatives versus liberals who report being very happy in basically every kind of questionnaire that they've done since 1972. Conservatives also report higher levels of meaning in their life. Two social psychologists started doing this test all around the world, happened all over the world. People who self-identify as conservative are happier and have more meaning than people who self-identify as liberal. Well, this guy's trying to figure out why, and he had a few ideas. Now I'm going to read some of the theories behind this that's shared in the article. It says conservatives are more likely to be patriotic and religious. They're more likely to be married happily, less likely to divorce. They tend to be, well, I'd already said more religious. Again and again, people who are more religious tend to report better well-being in general. So some people say, well, if a liberal was religious, patriotic, and happily married, never divorced, let's say, they would be just as happy as conservatives if they did all those things. Well, part of being a liberal is not really caring much about those things and accusing those who are religious or patriotic as being fascist monsters all the time. My favorite part is it says that conservatives tend to be more objectively attractive. Well, yeah, come on. Look at me here. Look at me through this audio-only format. You know, it's obvious. But flipping on the other side and looking at people who tend to be liberals, this was interesting, and you can definitely see it in our political discourse. Quote, white liberals view all other racial and ethnic subgroups more warmly than their own. There is no other combination of ideology and race or ethnicity that produces a similar pattern. This tension, being part of a group that one hates, creates strong disassociative pressures on many white liberals. This may explain the racialized differences among liberals with respect to mental health. In other words, white liberals have way more self-reported mental health issues than do liberals of other complexions. So, yeah, he came up with no conclusions per se, but it's pretty obvious. And I think, too, just a conservative perspective on life, Tom Sewell, who's a genius, of course, he wrote about people who have a tragic view of life being overall healthier. You would think, oh, well, that's weird. Saying tragic would be happier. Well, it's some way that you set expectations. This is why a recent survey was done. Finland was number one in personal happiness. And a lot of Finns were passing around this study. I'm Finnish, as you know, and a lot of people were passing on the study and laughing about it, because if you ever want to see a person taciturn and unsmiling, it's a Finnish person. We are not ebullient in our joy. We keep everything inside, keep it to ourselves, stay on the path. But I've tried to explain to people a lot of this, I think, is just the perspective of what one expects out of life. If you expect out of life that it's going to be tough, you're going to have to work hard, and things might not work out. You know, they might, you know, if you work really hard, but you might never, that company you're starting up might not pan out. The career you chose, it might be obsoleted by technology. If you understand that going in, you're just like, well, compared to how things could have been, things are going pretty well. So yeah, I'm content. And being content, I personally think, is better than being happy. I don't know exactly how these terms are defined, but just feeling okay with things. Happiness seems like more of an emotion, being giddy about something, and that's always going to go up and down. But if you're content with your lot, and yeah, it would be nice if I had a newer car. It would be nice if I had a fancier house. but I got it pretty darn good. When you look around the world, when you look at the homeless camps throughout California, you're like, ooh, man, I really lucked out. You know, I got people who love me. I got a roof over my head. I have a job. It could be a lot worse. And I think if you have that perspective, you're naturally going to be a little bit happier than somebody who has been raised on grievances and how life is unfair and the world is unfair and everything's terrible. And by the way, we're going to die of climate change. If we don't die of climate change, then cops are going to shoot us just every time they pull us over for speeding. It just casts a dark cloud over your life. I think another thing, too, and you see this a lot with youth mental health plummeting lately, is you need a stable foundation to feel anchored. It's kind of like kids have a lot of issues if they come from a broken home. In my case, my parents got divorced when I was like a freshman in high school, and that caused issues. But you think of kids, too, who never had a dad in the house, or their home life was very violent or very unstable. Those people had it way worse than I do. But also, they have no foundation that grounds them. They have no home base. When stuff's chaotic at school, I can still run back home and say, oh, all these terrible things are happening. And I know that my parents would accept me. They would love me. My brother and sister, they might help, or we might be in a civil sibling rivalry mode. But there was just that stability there that grounded you. And I think when you're conservative, you kind of have that grounding that you can return to. And when you're having a really miserable week and on Friday you get the pink slip, you've been laid off, you can still go home. Everybody's there is going to comfort you. You go to church and you're like, okay, everything's all right. And I know that so-and-so in the congregation died and this other couple had a new baby. It just gives you that stability that I think is essential to being a little more even keeled. So I just thought that was interesting, especially as we're talking about all the mental health issues going on among the young, among the older. I think if you aren't a little crazy paying attention to the news, that's probably a bad thing. I think the news is designed to make you feel a little bit crazy. It's like everybody on this planet has lost their minds. I think that's pretty normal. Again, it's interesting to talk about these things and find out, okay, why are people so miserable and so many people unhappy? And it's not just like all conservatives are happy-go-lucky people. Gosh, turn on Twitter. People are screaming and yelling and freaking out about every little thing. Yeah, don't make politics your life. That's another thing that'll make you very unhappy, whether you're on the right or the left. People on the left tend to worship politicians or think every kind of bill passing is going to save or destroy our nation. If you're putting that kind of pressure on your brain, it's not going to do very well. So, stuff to think about. Shifting over to the international scene, a bad thing is happening because China and Russia are getting more and more buddy-buddy all the time. Xi was in was at the Kremlin recently this week, and he is rolling out this global civilization initiative, basically saying, you know, hey, we should be the superpower. We should be setting the agenda for the world. But now he's visiting Moscow and he's basically just tossing money around and making promises of friendship and so forth. Some analysts are calling this a strategic bromance. It's very odd how close they seem to be. They're always appearing together, visiting each other back and forth. They've decided to push the yuan and the ruble as an alternative to the US dollar. And while the rest of the world is condemning Russia, he's buddying up to them more than he ever has. So part of this latest deal is Putin is building a gas pipeline from Siberia to China so they can get a lot of fuel because China actually isn't much of an oil producer there. They're expanding bilateral trade, cooperating in energy and food security, which could be very important. Food issues are going to be huge in the next few years. Developing rail, other cross-border logistics infrastructure. China is already Russia's largest trading partner, so yeah, it could be a little difficult, a bumpy ride ahead. I know a former guest, Gray Connolly, talks a lot about Dragon Bear, this alliance of Russia and China. And it says since, I think, 2012, these two leaders have met over 40 times. They're always chatting on the phone, probably on each other's Snapchats. So, it should be something very concerning to all the people in the West. And while Xi and Putin were meeting, what was President Biden doing? Well, he was stumbling on the teleprompter trying to read a poem.
Richard Blanco returned to a poem he wrote from the second inaugural of Barack and Me, a poem, one today. It says, "And always one moon like a silent drum tapping at every rooftop and every window on every in of every county, country." Let me start this over again. I'm getting so intimidated by being here. "And always one moon like a silent drum tapping on every rooftop and every window of one country, county, all of us facing the stars. Hope, a new constellation waiting for us to map it, waiting for us to name it together."
And then he gave an award to Mindy Kaling. All awards that Mindy Kaling has ever gotten should be removed after that horrible Velma show that she's involved with. Everybody says it's horribly awful, to say the least. Hey, now let's get to the song of the week. This one, I'm picking a band, Ariel, just because I happened to see them in concert last Wednesday. It was epic. It was shoegaze. It was insanely loud. And it was good to actually get out there and recognizing faces in the crowd, too, that we used to go to shows back in the day in the 90s when the first advent of shoegaze happened. And this song is called Mermaid in a Manhole. It was so glorious. My ears were ringing for quite a few days afterwards, but it was worth every moment. Thanks very much for listening. If you haven't subscribed, please do. If you haven't reviewed this show, please give us 5 stars and check out Ricochet. Go to ricochet.com. Sign up. It's dirt cheap. Great group of people there. And I'll talk to you next week.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.